Things went on like this for several weeks. One by one, Nick's contacts located me. They were tired of scoring through Nick and having him steal the head off their caps. What a crew. Mooches, fags, four-flushers, stool pigeons, bums, unwilling to work, unable to steal, always short of money, always whining for credit. In the whole lot, there was not one who wouldn't wilt and spill as soon as someone belted him in the mouth and said, "Where did you get it?" The worst of the lot was Gene Dooley, a scrawny little Irishman with a manner between fag and pimp. Gene was informer to the bone. He probably pulled out dirty lists of people, his hands were always dirty, and read them off to the law. You could see him bustling into Black and Tan headquarters during the Irish trouble, in a dirty gray toga turning in Christians, giving information to the Gestapo, the GPU, sitting in a cafeteria talking to a narcotics agent. Always the same thin, ratty face, shabby, out-of-date clothes, whiny, penetrating voice. The most unbearable thing about Gene was his voice. It went all through you. This voice was my first knowledge of his existence. Nick had just arrived at my apartment with some score money when I was called to the hall phone by the buzzer. "I'm Gene Dooley," said the voice. "I'm waiting for Nick, and I've been waiting a long time." His voice went up on long time to a shrill, grating whine. I said, "Well, he's here now. I expect you'll see him directly," and I hung up. Next day, Dooley called me again. "I'm just around the corner from your place. Do you mind if I come on over? It's cooler for me to meet you alone." He hung up before I could say anything, and 10 minutes later he was standing in the door. When one personality meets another for the first time, there is a period of mutual examination on the intuitive level of empathy and identification. But it was impossible to relate oneself to Dooley in any way. He was simply the focal point for a hostile, intrusive force. You could feel him walk right into your psyche and look around to see if anything was there he could make use of. I stepped back a little from the door to avoid contact with him. He squeezed himself into the room and immediately sat down on the couch and lit a cigarette. "It's better to meet alone like this." His smile was ambiguously sexual. "Nick is a very uncool guy." He stood up and handed me $4. "Do you mind if I take off here?" he asked, pulling off his coat. I'd never heard anyone else use this expression. For an insane moment, I thought he was making advances. He dropped his coat on the couch and rolled up his sleeve. I brought him 2 caps and a glass of water. He had his own works, for which I was grateful. I watched him as he hit a vein, pressed the dropper, and rolled down his sleeve. When you're hooked, the effects of a shot are not dramatic, but the observer who knows what to look for can see the immediate working of junk in the blood and cells of another user. I could detect no change whatever in Dooley. He put on his coat and picked up the cigarette which had been smoldering in an ashtray. He looked at me with his pale blue eyes that seemed to have no depth at all. They looked artificial. "Let me tell you something," he said. "You're making a big mistake to trust Nick. A few nights ago, I was in Thompson's cafeteria and I ran into Rogers, the agent. He told me, 'I know Nick is scoring for all you goddamn junkies here in the village. You're getting good stuff, too, between 16% and 20%. Well, you can tell Nick this. We can take him anytime we want. And when we do catch up to him, he's going to work with us. He opened up for me once. He'll do it again. We're going to find out where this stuff is coming from.'" Dooley looked at me and sucked on his cigarette. "When they get Nick, they'll get you. You better let Nick know that if he talks, you'll have him poured into a barrel of concrete and dumped in the East River. I don't need to tell you any more. You can see what the situation is." He looked at me, trying to gauge the effect of his words. It was impossible to tell just how much of this story I was expected to believe. Perhaps it was just a roundabout way of saying, "How will you ever know who fingered you? With Nick such an obvious suspect, if I talked, you could never be sure, could you now?" "Could you let me have 1 cap on credit?" he asked. "What I've just told you should be worth something." I gave him a cap and he pocketed it without comment. He stood up. "Well, I'll be seeing you." I'll call at the same time tomorrow.